Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Behind the Binge. It is your host, Marissa, and today we are being joined by our very own Associate RD, Morgan Yoder. Morgan has been a part of the Behind the Binge team for a couple months now, but shortly after joining, she had to take her maternity leave. So now she is with a little newborn and ready to start taking private coaching clients again. We brought Morgan onto the team to help us better help you, so that she could see more one-to-one private coaching clients who need support in overcoming binge eating and becoming an intuitive eater. We love Morgan, and I can't wait for you to get to know more about her in today's episode.
Welcome to Behind the Binge, the podcast where we bring forth much-needed conversations about binge eating recovery and ditching diet culture. I'm your host, Marissa Kaimilik, a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and binge eating coach. This is our space to dive into practical tips to heal from binge eating, challenge your diet culture beliefs, discuss the nuances of intuitive eating, and empower you to recover. Let's start exploring what's behind the binge.
All right, we have Morgan here. Thanks so much for joining me today, Morgan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So I'm really excited for the listeners to get to know more about you. You've been working with me on the Behind the Binge team for a couple months now and just got back from your maternity leave. And I figured people would want to know a bit about who you are and, you know, why they should work with you. So just to kind of kick it off for everybody, why don't you let the listeners know a bit about who you are and where you're from?
So I'm from Holmes County, Ohio. It's the center of Amish country, which is kind of its own bubble itself.
Are you from Ohio originally?
Yeah, I'm from like central Ohio originally.
Very cool. And you have two little ones, two daughters now.
Yep, I have two little girls. One's brand new. Her name's Daphne. And then Sylvia's a year and a half, almost two.
Oh my gosh, two under two. Not just under two, but like very young.
Yeah.
Well, we're so happy to have you on the team. And so what is it that got you interested in becoming a dietitian in the first place?
I think like most people, I've gotten into dietetics because of my own disorder eating. I was in a pretty toxic relationship through the end of high school that really just damaged my body image and my whole self-worth with that. And so my whole like summer before and going into dietetics was really trying to chase this perfect diet and how can I maintain or change my body in the way that will actually satisfy me, which I think we all know is not really the end goal, but that's really what got me into dietetics in the first place.
And so it sounds like you started your dietetic education with a disordered relationship with food. Do you feel like schooling helped or do you feel like it made it worse in some ways?
So going into school and getting away from all of my high school friends, I was still in that relationship that kind of held that like toxic vibe. And so by the time I was in college, I was so isolated because you get into that kind of realm where you can't really reach out. And my self-worth was so low that I couldn't break away from it. So once I was able to get away from that relationship itself, I found myself at rock bottom with my relationship with food. I was hardcore restricting, and then I would find myself binging in the evenings or the weekends or whatever that looked like. And so getting to that rock bottom was when I found myself like I had to do something to find recovery. So schooling, yeah. It was kind of like a roller coaster because I would find myself dieting again and then find myself trying to fuel and nourish my body and kind of swinging towards intuitive eating, but still with the diet culture lens. So I'd say it benefited me a little bit because I at least was nourishing myself a little bit more than I was before. But it wasn't until I was doing a research project in college when I was researching emotional eating because I thought that was my problem. And that's when I actually stumbled upon intuitive eating. And that just changed my life because that's when I found the research and was really like, wow, I can't go back from this. It felt so unethical to be studying weight loss and weight restrictive diets and even medical nutrition therapy that was weight restrictive when I knew the research on intuitive eating and how that impacted people's lives.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like so many people listening can relate to that journey of almost like a pseudo recovery where you kind of tap into healing your relationship with food and eating more, but you don't really heal
what's truly underneath, whether that be sources of fat phobia or healing from a toxic relationship or really understanding the physical deprivation our body goes through to get to that point of needing to binge, right? And so it sounds like that emotional eating project really opened up your eyes to a lot of those things. So you said you thought it was emotional eating. So tell us a little bit more about that. What was it that you, that kind of made you realize it was something different? And what did you really uncover through that project?
So at that time, I did start going to therapy and kind of dealing with those emotions, but it wasn't actually helping my relationship with food and I was still binging. And so I was reading all of this stuff on intuitive eating and I thought it should be helping. But then I realized that it was the restriction that I did for so long that was causing my binges, and having to get past that was the hardest thing. So I think the hardest thing to be able to get past that restriction was being able to eat what I wanted in front of people. So at the time I was in college, and so we were eating in a food hall or whatever, and like going to get dessert was terrifying. Like they literally called it fat bar at my college.
And oh my gosh.
Having that whole stigma around it in the first place and breaking through that while my friends were dealing with their own disordered eating and having that diet culture all around was really difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's so horrible that they created like a weird fear and stigma around normal fun foods in the college cafeteria. That's wild. I feel like any dietetic student today, at least at Marshall where I did my undergrad, we would not have that. We'd go into that cafeteria and be like, take this, don't call it that. Like, let's create a more of a normal experience with the desserts at our college campus cafeteria. Wow. I don't know if from your past toxic relationship, if like eating around him was something that was really difficult as well. Is that something that helped to fuel that disordered relationship with food?
Yeah, definitely. In that relationship, there was a lot of body comments and he was in this whole like bodybuilding kind of realm and cutting and gaining and all that stuff. Mm. And so the comments around food were just kind of crazy. So I think I kind of stopped having social interactions around food. And before I got into college, when I was still in that, I got to the point where I did the Avacare cleanse with my family, which was kind of a whole thing in itself. And once I got out of that, I was still trying to do like meal replacement shakes and vegetables, and just to the point where I was restricting so much.
So you mentioned your family. So I kind of want to take it back. Before that toxic relationship, what was your relationship with food like growing up?
When I was very young, I watched my mom go in and out of diets. She was a big Weight Watchers person. And, you know, they're like everything that she bought had the points on it and stuff like that. And I vividly remember, I don't even know how young I was, my mom would be exercising in the living room and I wanted to exercise with her so bad because she's my mom. And so she would just give me soup cans instead of weights. And then I would beg her to have like the Slim Fast shakes with her, which that kind of started the whole meal replacement thing, because it's such an easy excuse to be like, well, I had a shake and it was, that's it. And so that kind of really fueled later my relationship with food. And then my dad started to obsess over diets and finding the perfect way of living. And so he's kind of gone in and out of being a vegan and all of this stuff. So while he has good intentions because he wants to like have the health benefits for his heart health, it's still very restrictive and fueled a lot of those fears in myself going into my adult life.
Do you feel like now that you're becoming a parent, there are things that you reflect on from that upbringing that you know you'll do differently?
Yes, absolutely. And especially, I'm so thankful that I found intuitive eating before I had kids, but it's so difficult like to give your kid a cupcake with dinner. Like I never thought that would be so difficult, but it is so crazy how it works. Kids just naturally know how to eat intuitively. And so I'll put a cupcake out and yeah, she might go for it first, but she'll take a few bites of it and set it down and then go to the next thing. But I understand how that can be so hard for parents to watch, especially getting started later after kids are so into this treat of cupcakes or candy or whatever it is and kind of normalizing that. Because as an adult, it's difficult. So as you watch kids go through that, it can be really hard to just let go of the reins.
I've talked to so many past clients who are also parents. And when we talk about translating the intuitive eating skills that they're learning for themselves to their children, that is a big fear that
when they normalize the cupcake with meals, that that's all their kid is going to eat. And with time and allowing them to create a normal experience with that cupcake, like you said, you'll find that the kid can just kind of have some and move on, and it doesn't become such a special thing. Whereas when it is the treat, there's that novelty to it that makes it more exciting. And that's sort of something that's just ingrained into our own psychology. When something feels off limits, we want it more. And we can see evidence of that time and time again in so many different things in our life. So back to you, though, back to your relationship with food. Okay, we talked about your upbringing and how your disordered relationship with food started and kind of those early light bulb moments for you with recovery. What was your motivation for recovery? Because we all know recovery is hard, and the restriction tries to reel us back in time and time again. We just think, oh, well, let me just lose 5 pounds. Let me just, you know, try to change this or that, right? What was it that really motivated you to see recovery through?
Yeah, so I feel like I was really sneaky about my like disordered eating. And I feel like a lot of people kind of find ways to hide it, especially from family and friends. So my cover at the time was, well, I'll just train for a half marathon. That way I can have the excuse of overexercising and undereating and all that stuff. And so I actually ended up not doing the half marathon. I trained for it all the way up until, and then the big motivator for me was I was missing out on so many social events, and being young and in college and missing all of this time of my life that is the least responsibility I'm ever going to have is really hard to look at. And so when I realized, wow, I'm saying no way more than I'm saying yes, it was really like that light bulb moment of this is not right. This is not okay. And so I started saying yes to things, and it started taking away that time that I could overexercise, or what I would end up going out to eat for social events or something. And being able to say yes to those prevented my disordered eating from being able to be okay. Because if I'm eating in front of people, I didn't want to overly restrict or kind of be the downer of the party that like wouldn't participate. And so really missing out on my social life was the biggest motivator in finding recovery.
Yeah, I relate to that so much. That's such a big part of it for so many people, is just realizing how much time dieting and diet culture and overexercising really takes from you and your life. And I think that it's interesting within your story how your biggest motivator of social life was also your biggest fear in your disorder of eating in front of people. So you were not only saying yes to scary recovery, but you were, and also saying yes to social events, but you were saying yes to, okay, now I'm going to eat in front of people and I'm going to eat what I want in front of people. So how did that go for you? What was it like normalizing eating in front of others again without the judgment?
Yeah, I was really lucky to be surrounded by like a good community at the time, because I had a friend that I would like try to just say no and hide in my room, and she would pull me out and like force me to go do things, which is the biggest blessing, because I didn't have support in my eating because I was too ashamed to talk about it at the time. And so having that pressure, I guess, to do things was really how I got out of my room. And that's when I would binge by myself, was when I was hiding in my room. And so getting out and getting into that social atmosphere. And I had no energy when I wasn't eating. And so having that lack of energy going to classes and trying to do these things at night just wasn't possible. So I was kind of forced to fuel myself at that time. So the social part of it was, yeah, terrifying. But having a community around you, even if they don't know what's going on, if they're still supportive of you and care about you and you feel that, it was still beneficial, even though they didn't know what was going on.
I think community in any form is so important, because it takes a lot of the shame away, because really we only feel shame when it feels like we're the only one, right? But when we can be surrounded by other people who support us or even share their struggles with us, just other normal human struggles, we can really create that effect where it feels like we're zooming out, seeing a bigger picture that we're not the only one, we're not in this isolated experience, and there are other people around us that we can have support from. So did this friend know about your food problems, or no, they were just your friend and they were like, get out and come have fun with us?
I should ask her now. I'm sure she was suspicious because she would make comments about how little I would eat sometimes and like how much I would exercise, but she never like was very forward about it. I think she probably had some sort of clue. We had another friend in college that was like severely in an eating disorder and was in and out of kind of treatment centers, which sounded terrible because she was just taken away and thrown out of her whole life. But I think having that extreme when I did feel like I was extreme gave me an excuse to just kind of brush it under the rug too, though.
I feel like that's so important to highlight that there was a little bit of comparison there too of like, oh, I'm not sick enough. So you probably felt like you didn't deserve to talk about it or complain about it or really reach out for help because you saw someone who was more clinically worse off, but that doesn't make anyone any more or less worthy or deserving of getting help.
Yeah, absolutely. And binge eating in college is so normalized, especially when it comes to like binging on the weekends, because it's so easy to hide through the week restricting. And then when you just go hard on the weekends, so many people do that anyways. And so it's just so normalized.
And it shouldn't be, right? Like no. We shouldn't, you know, we should absolutely recognize those warning signs of like, hey, there might be a problem going on here. Absolutely. So it sounds like you had a little bit of therapy, but unrelated to your relationship with food. So did you get any help at all with your recovery?
No, I didn't. I think I was so afraid that I wasn't sick enough. And that was the biggest thing that held me back. And so I just like dug my head into research and reading every book I could find and listening to all the podcasts and trying to like fill my mind with that side of it. Because you slip back and forth into diet culture and trying to break away from all those beliefs that you grew up with is so hard, especially when you're surrounded by it everywhere you go.
How do you feel like that impacts the work you now do with your clients, having come from a place where you didn't have professional support or help and now getting to be that person for others?
So, I mean, the shame that I felt when I was in the midst of that and that isolation, I don't think there's nothing else in my life that I felt like that. And I know that everyone's experience is different, but when I picture someone else feeling like that, that's a huge motivation for me to help them find recovery. And so I feel like even though I can't relate directly because it's a different story and a different life and everything else is different, I know in my own story how that shame felt. And so I think that relating to people in that way can be really powerful.
So what do you feel like is your favorite part of the work you do in seeing clients?
Oh, I love seeing the journey from week to week. I think it's so easy for clients to focus on the negative and be like, oh, well, like I binged this week. And it's like, well, look at where you came from. A lot of people get so caught up in how they took one step back when they've taken 10 steps forward. And so I like to be able to draw out those small wins from week to week, but also seeing, well, look at where you started and how far you've come to here, and kind of seeing people light up and what they've accomplished through everything is super rewarding.
Definitely, definitely. Especially when you've been there yourself and it's like in those dark moments, you feel like you're just never going to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And when you finally get to see your clients start to see that glimmer of a light at the end of the tunnel, you're like, yes, exactly. That is the moment where you realize there's an end to this torture with food in our body, and it's near, and we can see it. We can start to see that progression week to week as those wins start piling on, no matter how small they are, right? They don't have to be some like grand win. Even being like, yeah, I went out to dinner this week, that can be a really big win, where I brought in one fear food. It doesn't matter how big or how small. Those wins are so important to continue to celebrate along the way. And I know that's a rewarding part for the job for me as well. So kind of to wrap up your story of where you've been and where you are now, how would you describe that? Like, what was your relationship with food like before recovery? And what does it look like now, here and now, day-to-day life for Morgan?
So before recovery, it was completely like earning my food and being so full of shame when I did binge or when I stepped out of those rules I had set for myself. And now I'm actually... which I've been in my intuitive eating journey for a while now, and I'm just starting to find the joy in cooking again.
I remember growing up and I loved cooking with my mom, and then my dad learned how to cook when I was a kid, still learning with him. But then being on my own, I absolutely loathed cooking because it was such a chore and there's so much stress to it because of all those diet rules and the shame if you did add anything that was satisfying. And so now that I'm actually learning to enjoy cooking again, because it's no longer this like scary, shameful thing to enjoy food, I'm really loving where I'm at now. And I'm able to have those foods that I enjoy. And I also love those quote unquote healthy foods that were so full of diet culture before. They've kind of lost that appeal of just being quote unquote healthy. And I can add all the good things that are satisfying while nourishing my body in the same way.
Yeah, like bacon wrapped asparagus or like adding butter. Yeah,
I did bacon wrapped peppers the other day that were so good.
Ooh, that sounds so good. Yeah, that's like the joy in getting back to cooking or baking or anything, is really getting to experiment and not be so particular about ingredients. I remember I still am not the best cook, even as a dietitian, or the best baker. But I remember a few weeks ago, my partner Christian was like, oh, I'm really craving some cookies. Like, I'd love some cookies after dinner. And we didn't have any, but I had all the ingredients to make cookies on hand. And I was like, oh, I'll just like whip some up really quickly. I just pulled up a recipe from the internet and I didn't have to worry about, oh, I don't have this or that or the non-sugar this or the blah. I was like, oh, I have butter and I have flour and I have eggs and I have, you know, it was just so simple. Whereas before, I remember I'd be Googling like, what's an alternative for eggs in cooking? Or like, what's an alternative mm-hmm. for sugar in cookies? Which I'm like, no, then it's not cookies. So I love to hear that. And I love how you highlighted how it's your relationship with food and even being an intuitive eater continues to transform even after your kind of main recovery. Because so many people that I work with, even they see recovery as like a start and a stop. But I really think it's a start, but then it's a continual evolution for the rest of your life. And that's really what intuitive eating is. It's not a finishing point. It's not a check mark. It's just gaining the tools to be able to listen and understand your body through different phases of life, because you're continuing to change as a person too. So love that you kind of highlighted that, how, you know, that joy of cooking is finally coming back to you and you're experiencing it in a whole new way. So that's fun. Well, thank you for sharing all of that with us. I have some fun questions. I was going to say like icebreaker questions, but this is the end of the episode. So just kind of like fun questions to finish us out so that the listeners can really get to know a bit about you and your personality. To start, of course, some food questions. Sweet or salty?
Oh, for sure, sweet. I like try to find something every day that's sweet, especially in the evenings, because I love like winding down and relaxing on the couch with something sweet.
I was trying to answer this question for myself as well. And I'm like, I used to always 1000% of the time say sweet. And I really do think I have something sweet every single day. But when I just want to reach for something, a quick snack, or I just am in between meals, I tend to gravitate towards like some chips, like something salty, some pretzels, anything like that. So I hate to be the one to say both. I think I'm a little bit of both, but I think I have to have a little bit of both every day. Like, it's like a healthy mix. But definitely, I'm definitely a big sweet fan. What about just your overall favorite food? Do you have a favorite food?
Tacos of any kind. Ooh, I used to just say like fish tacos, but I had tacos with brisket the other day and it might have been the best thing I've ever had.
Oh my gosh. Yum. I love tacos as well. Beach or mountains?
Oh, I'm a little back and forth with this. I feel like I have to see the beach at least once a year, or I really notice when I don't go to the beach once a year. But I love to hike, so that's kind of where the mountains come in too.
Yeah, I was torn on this one as well, but I would have to say the beach, definitely. Summer or winter?
I really love like fall and spring. I'm in Ohio, and so we have just beautiful weather in the fall and spring, if we actually get it, which is kind of hit or miss some years. But yeah, I really love the fall. I would have to go with the fall.
If you had to pick between summer or winter, what would you pick?
Definitely summer. I can do a lot more in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the same. I've always been a summer girl, but I'm starting to love the fall more and more. And I'm in the South, in South Carolina. So it is a lot more mild. than where I grew up in West Virginia, where it'd be like, even the fall was too cold for me. Like, I'm pretty sure they're already in the 50s in Lewisburg where I grew up.
That's
and I'm like,
no.
Oh my God. I'm like, no, right now it's like 65. And I'm like, that's a cool fall temperature I can vibe with. So, so funny. Dogs or cats?
I'm a dog person. I grew up with a lot of cats. And I think I can deal with like outdoor cats, but my husband's allergic to them. And so then I realized how dirty they are. I feel like
they are
I know
dirty.
Dogs can be dirty too, but I have like a bougie dog that doesn't shed. So that kind of really helps that situation.
Yeah, it's definitely dirty when they're indoor outdoor. Like two of my three cats are indoor outdoor. So they'll go out during the day and then come in. And when they come in, like my one cat, Milo, loves to get in the bathtub and like lick the dripping water. And when he jumps in there, that's usually where I notice like, oh my God, you're so dirty, because his paw prints will get on the bathtub. I'm like, this is horrible. They're definitely messier than my dog is. And I can't say dogs or cats because I am definitely, both. I love my cats, but I also love my dog. So.
I think my problem is my mother-in-law has a cat that is super fluffy and beautiful, but it doesn't clean itself. And like, so some cats like keep up with themselves and some cats do not. And that just kind of grosses me out.
Definitely. Okay, two more. Favorite way to spend your free time?
I love being outside. That's been kind of difficult lately with a new baby, but we just got a pull behind for our bikes. And so we have like a rails to trails around here that, so we've been biking, but anything to be outside, whether it's hiking or biking or walking or whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fun. And then ideal vacation.
I would love to go to an island somewhere. I'll definitely go with the beach thing from earlier. I love going to the beach, but the only beaches I've really been to are like Florida, North Carolina, Alabama, and nowhere like tropical. So I'd love to go to like a tropical island.
Ooh, definitely. There's nothing like tropical waters. I'd say Florida is like pretty close to that, depending on where you go. But those like crystal clear tropical waters, there's been few times that I've seen that, and there's nothing like it. You definitely have to. I think my ideal vacation would be exactly the same. Or Italy. Everyone who knows me knows I'm obsessed with Italy. I've been many times, but I will still always choose Italy. Awesome. Well, I am so glad that you were able to come on the podcast as part of our team. It's great that you were able to let the listeners and our followers, viewers all know a little bit more about you. And so if someone, even though this is also like my pitch, but if someone is interested in working with you, Morgan, where can they find you?
So I help run the Behind the Binge account on Instagram, and you can also find me on Behind the Binge, our website.
Yeah, behindthebinge.com. You can apply for private coaching and mark that you want to work with Morgan. And Morgan's in the Behind the Binge DMs, so you can DM her over there if you have questions about private coaching, and you can get to know her more over there. But this was so fun. I'm so glad we were able to do this.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode and getting to know more about Morgan. Again, if you're interested in working one-to-one with Morgan, I definitely recommend you go and apply. Go to behindthebinge.com and click on private coaching. And after you submit an application, Morgan will be reaching out shortly to set up a discovery call. On this discovery call, you both can explore if you feel like you would be the right fit together to help you achieve your goals. Anyway, huge thanks to Morgan for joining us today on the podcast and also being a part of this Behind the Binge team. If you enjoyed this episode, so do not forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. It helps us to reach new listeners. And I'm sure you will be hearing from us very, very soon in the next one. Bye, everyone.